Hello and welcome to the Watson Weekend. We're your hosts. Hi, Rick Watson.
Hey, it's Jessica Lasuski. It's another Friday. Welcome back.
I am excited to be back. This is your weekly dose of medicine with just enough sugar to make it go down well. We're your go-to place for retail, tech, news, e-commerce.
Yes, and while this is a live show, we are not professionals. We're trying. We're trying. We're getting there very slowly.
Trying is it's generous. Let's
All you
just
can do
call it,
is try.
let's just call it generous.
Well, all you can do is try.
Right.
So we have got so much to kick off today. We have our special guest, longtime friend of the show, Eric Huberman, who's going to join us, who is the founder and CEO of Hawk Media. But first, Rick, you're going to get us into how we make this magic happen every week. Who's bringing the show to us?
Yeah, every week we have a great sponsor. Our sponsor this week is the fine folks at Mirakl. Because traditional e-commerce is just code for not growing, it's time to do better than the status quo and join 450 retailers that are scaling six times faster with AI automation and the platform built for what next? Marketplace, dropship, and retail media in an enterprise-grade solution. So they're helping retailers accelerate with Mirakl, and we're happy to be part of their team. They have a summit coming up, actually just in a couple of months. I'll be on a panel there, so if you're planning to attend that event, look for us there.
That's amazing. Yeah. So we are a live show. Drop us a comment, question. Let us know where you're at, what's on your mind. And if you don't catch the show live, you can also catch us anywhere you love your podcast. We like video, we like audio. We're everywhere. Amazon, Apple, Spotify, even some of the smaller ones, Rick, you know, some of the undergrounds, right?
Yeah, undergrounds like Joe's Podcast Network.
We don't discriminate. We love them all.
No, we have low standards, but we're excited for the show today. Our headline guest is Eric Huberman, Chairman and CEO of Hawk Media. We're going to talk about the state of digital marketing, social media strategy in 2025, what's going on with digital marketing, kind of in this. I won't say we're on the precipice of something here, but we're not in a 2025 that anyone expected. And so I think marketing is trying to predict what's happening with inventory because kind of the two go hand in hand. And so when the merchandising team is pulling forward inventory, what should marketing do in response? I think we should have that discussion. And then of course, week three, Mr. Kaplan held hostage.
Someone let him out.
We need like a jail cell analogy here rather than like, I think we need to have Vinny work on a new intro slide for him. Not Kaplan happy at an event.
No.
Kaplan depressed behind bars.
Right. He's not strolling the halls of all the different vendor booths, learning out, like checking out what's going on with his like very chic coffee cup and sweater vest. That's not happening.
No, he's not. So let's get into it with today's headline hangover. It's sponsored by Passport. They're your partner for international shipping, compliance, and localization. So we're proud to have their. Actually, we just had a episode with Alex Yoncher drop this week on the weekly podcast. So if you haven't caught that, please check it out.
Very cool. All right, you got our first story, Rick. What's going on in the UPS world?
I do. UPS, look, as we saw last quarter, UPS was hit by a comet in that UPS is told by Amazon that they're going to accelerate their decline out of UPS network. That's prompting a lot of changes. In particular, over $3.5 billion in costs being taken out of UPS. They're closing. Last year, all of 2024, UPS closed 11 facilities as a result of sort of gliding down its volume. What a guess how many facilities they're shutting down just in the first half of this year?
Lay it on me.
Over 70. So pretty crazy number. That's number one. Second is with the tariff challenges, UPS is predicting this is going to hit the SMB customer base hardest.
Right.
And there are a couple of reasons that this is bad for UPS. One is UPS has SMBs as their fastest growing customer segment. Second of all, they're some of their most profitable customers. And in particular, the China to U.S. lane, U.S. does international air freight, is one of their most profitable lanes. And so they're already seeing, particularly their larger manufacturers who have the biggest crack in the market, mm-hmm. migrating some to the countries that were mentioned were Vietnam, Thailand, and actually Europe, out of some Chinese volume.
Yeah. And they also referenced the Amazon relationship, which they've been pretty forthcoming about its lack of profitability, but they just went even harder. So what was the news there?
Yeah, the big news to me was that 60% of Amazon's volume is not profitable for UPS.
Wow.
And that is of all the volume that they're getting rid of. It's a huge number. Look, it's the shipping business. You don't make money on your big customers. You make money on your small customers. The big companies, what they do is pay for the facility. And so all these facilities, now that they don't have sponsored anymore, Amazon is closing a whole bunch of facilities, which, by the way, are probably their least automated facilities. They're consolidating volume into fewer, more highly automated facilities, and they're laying off over 20,000 workers this year, which kind of flies in the face of the jobs report that we just saw drop.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to hit that because that one's a head scratcher.
Correct.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Then next up, we'll talk a little bit about Shopify. Remember the show, What's Happening Now with Rerun and this is what's happening now. What's happening now is Shopify's shop store or app store is changing their monetization rules. During the pandemic, when everyone was worried about what's going to happen, which actually kind of seems like the opposite, app stores should have been booming, yet Shopify gave them a break. You're not going to pay commissions, which is 15% on their first million of sales each year. Well, now Shopify is did we say each year? We meant over your lifetime. So that's really the change. It's they're changing so that you're not going to have to pay that 15%. You're going to have to pay it after your first million regardless. And so that means a lot more revenue from Shopify. That's potentially a 15%. All of that is in their merchant services business. So that's where you see it show up in their line items. So there are a lot of apps that are upset about this. Personally, I think there are 2 points to keep in mind here. Number one is Shopify's app store already has too many damn apps. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are sort of garbage. And second is the big apps that people need. Shopify doesn't have an overly onerous, although Shopify is taking 15%, Apple's app store is taking 30%.
Yep.
Other app stores are taking even more than that. So in the grand scheme of the app store payola, Shopify is pretty tame by comparison. So they could still rightly make the claim that they're entrepreneur friendly, although there are plenty of e-commerce platforms that don't take any commission from their apps.
Right.
No, Magento never took a commission. WooCommerce has no idea which apps are plugged into them, for instance.
Yeah. But do you think that this is a foreshadowing of they want to offset maybe what they could see as some softening in other pockets of their business? They do rely a lot on SMBs as well. You see this feedback from UPS, that market's going to get hit. Is Shopify just trying to offset and rebalance the year to keep things going?
I think if they can find obvious levers to pull to goose revenue and margin, which is, this is pure margin.
Sure.
It's not like they're hiring people to maintain these apps or something.
Cash day one.
This is cash day one. I think second is a lot of, as we saw in the UPS report, a lot of their SMB sellers are single source from China. Mm-hmm. And I think that is true of a lot of Shopify sellers. We haven't seen Shopify earnings yet, which we will in the next 2 weeks. But I think what has the playbook been for direct-to-consumer e-commerce in the last 7 years? It's go to the Alibaba website, dream up a product, have it shipped to you, get a sample, right? Yeah. Find a 3PL.
Put a good brand on it, a nice template, and yeah. Bada boom, bada boom.
Launch a Shopify store. So I would say there's a lot of Shopify exposure here. And Amazon is actually I wouldn't say they're taking shots at Shopify, but I think they're taking shots at other retailers in particular, saying that in Amazon's earnings, one of the things they said was, we have a lot of Chinese direct sellers, meaning like Chinese sellers shipping from FBA, selling to American consumers. What American sellers are doing are manufacturing in China. They're having to pay import duties. And they need margin on top of this because they're not the manufacturer really, like China's manufacturing it. And so if you're in China and own a manufacturing plant, then you have more margin to work with. And so to me, that could point some fingers at Shopify and other merchants that we haven't seen the shoe drop on.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch for sure. I know you look forward to those earning days, just like you look forward to Florence's birthday. So.
It's like a Super Bowl.
It's like Christmas come early. So I'm sure you'll be recapping that. In the world of shopping, speaking of, and potential disruptors, ChatGPT is ready to help you shop till you drop and in a more meaningful way. Yeah. So Adam Fry was showing a preview at Wired. So he is the search product lead at OpenAI, if you're not aware. I think this will probably be a household name. We'll hear a lot more, especially at the rate of pace of what ChatGPT is doing. But essentially, they've offered a lot of shopping features that are really starting to eerily mirror Google Shopping and potentially give Google Shopping a run for their money. I'm going to see how technically savvy I am. Try to share a little bit of something here, just so I can show you guys what we're talking about. So I'm not going to do a live demo because I'm not that cool. But this was one of the images that was in the Wired article where someone's typing in, hey, what's the best espresso machine that comes as close to the taste of coffee in Italy as possible? And we get this beautiful recap from ChatGPT. We get a couple of examples of these machines, DeLonghi, and then where they're available, Walmart, DeLonghi, BrandSmart, which just looks a lot like the Google Shopping type of
very result. Similar, Jess.
Yeah, I got like a best budget choice imagery here, versatile, compact design. So, as far as the algorithm goes, there wasn't really an explanation of what is going to show up in terms of priority. Is it favoring reviews? Is it favoring other types of details? These are not paid. So these are organic. So OpenAI is not profiting yet. The big why in this, but it will definitely be something interesting to watch. They also said that this engine is going to be smart. So if like Rick, you know, you're shopping for your next black t-shirt and you say, you know, I want the style that really shows off my biceps. I don't want a loose cut. It's going to remember that. And you're only going to get bicep fitting shirts only. So in the future. So we've got a smart, intelligent engine that is really going to be built around your shopping preferences day in and day out.
Isn't that everyone's standard shopping filter?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So I guess my question really is like, how worried should Google be at this point?
I think Google should be shitting their pants at this point. I mean, really, all not only Google, but sites like Wirecutter, although I'm sure they're going to contribute content to this thing. Sure. But if you think about what is Wirecutter, they do a couple of things. Number one is obviously they have researchers on staff, which ChatGPT can't really replicate.
Yeah.
Humans testing products yet. Second is they develop a sort of scorecard for like how you should rate a coffee maker. And then they kind of rank all their products against that. And sometimes different things, like if you're looking for a big expensive one, or if you're like a coffee crazy person and want the air gun pour over with triple mocha or something. So I think, it's a good question that user posted in. It's like, why is this going to be a big thing, Google Shopping? I think the big question is like, how many times are you typing Google every day? And if you do that dozens and dozens of times, and if the traffic to Google goes down because people are typing into ChatGPT instead, when they're thinking about doing something, you're more naturally having a conversation with ChatGPT and not Google. And so if you're refining a purchase and saying like, hey, I want a dress for a party next week, and they show you something, where are you likely to follow up with that question? You're likely to just keep asking into that same prompt, saying like, no, I want something a little snazzier.
Show me this.
I want it to, like, Jess wants to twirl when she's on the dance floor, like all these things.
Yeah. Give me my tool. I need a full skirt. Yeah. So we're going to be watching this one pretty closely and just seeing what else happens here. I've got one more quick story, and then I think we're going to wrap. We've kept Eric waiting way too long, which is, where is NRF at? So Paula Rosenbloom did a post on LinkedIn, which we've talked about on this show as well. In the tariff conversation, it really does seem like NRF is missing. And that this is the lobbying group, which stands for retailers day in and day out. You know, that is really the lifeblood of why this organization exists. And it's not just the large retailers, Home Depots, Targets, Wayfairs, et cetera, who have descended down to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to plead their case. This is also the small businesses who really are the heartbeat of the retail community. And I think who NRF has tried to champion. And we've talked about that group being hit severely because they don't have the capacity to switch their supply chain on a moment's notice. They don't have the capital to pull a lot of inventory forward to get ahead of this. They also don't have the wherewithal to like switch and change the location of their manufacturing on a dime. And Matthew Shea, who we all know is the head of NRF, was recently on a news station talking about what his take is. And the take was like, basically that this is good for the future of the whole of America. This is the right plan. And that really, in addition to, it's almost like talking points, I feel like, that were given to him, in addition to not only the tariffs potentially helping shake some things up and deals getting made, and it'll be better for American consumers in the future, which will be better for retailers. In addition, we're getting tax reform, energy reform, all these things that will just make the economy better, that will ultimately help consumers and help retailers. So anyways, that's the story. We're going to keep watching it. I feel like they're MIA, and we'll...
Where are they at? NRF, where are they at? That's my summary.
That's the summary. All right. So we have got to bring Eric on. Like I said, we've been keeping him way too long. Eric's been on the show a couple of times. If you have not seen him before, hard to imagine, but he's the owner and founder of Hawk Media. Eric built his first business at 6, and his entrepreneurial journey has only accelerated since then. He has architected many successful ventures and really set these desires to revolutionize industries that needed to be disrupted. We know the media industry, the marketing, the agency industry certainly is one of those. And he wanted to disrupt the world for the better, and Hawk Media was born. In addition, if you've not heard, Hawk Media introduced last year Hawk AI, which is this amazing tool. It analyzes and benchmarks 8,000 different companies. So you can really understand where you're sitting relative to the marketing industry, how you can improve, get learnings. And so we're really excited to unpack that with Eric as well. So let's bring him on the show. Hello, hello.
Thank you. How you doing? Great.
Yeah, it's been a bit since we've seen you. We're excited to talk about all the new things happening. I know you guys have made some acquisitions recently.
Yeah.
You always have a lot going on and a lot to say, but I think we really want to start with what's your take on kind of the current situation, you know, in the marketing industry today? Rick talked about it.
Yep.
We've got, you know, merchandisers pulling inventory forward. We have marketers and CFOs probably at a bit of butting heads, like save money. No, I've got to keep growing. Like, what's your take on where we're at in this current moment?
I feel like we've entered year 6 of unprecedented times.
I feel like every time we talk to you,
Don't tell that to Nick Kaplan. He can't be hostage for 6 years.
Yeah, exactly. We are seeing the same things, but the good news is I'm actually the media is worse than the street, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so everything I see online and the commentary is the sky. Like, the funny thing is, like, everyone says the sky is falling. And then, like, I don't know if you guys saw the news this morning, but the jobs report, they're expecting 133,000 new jobs. We got 177,000. Like,
yeah,
the market isn't bad. The stock market had a big hit because of this, you know, it's
no one likes uncertainty.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it is. And it's still uncertain. So it's still not completely recovered. But we've also had the best 20 days in the market, which, to be clear, was preceded by a really bad few days. But the best 20 days in the market in, I think it was some ridiculous amount of time. Like, it's been, you know, there was a really scary upfront and then it started to come down to earth, which I'm not commenting. I actually think it's a weird move, but it's kind of what Trump's known for. He throws out these crazy statements and then he rocks it back to something more rational. It's a negotiating tactic he uses. And so why I say all that, it's not to get political. It's because if you're a business right now, you should be aware that that's pretty much, he's batting 1,000 on
that's
that.
That's what's strategy. Happening.
Right? It's ebbs and flows, right?
Well, it's not even ebbs and flows. It's like, he's going to say something crazy and then he's not going to really do it. And it's going to come out, the actual outcome is going to be rational. The statement's going to be crazy. The actual action is not. And so knowing that doesn't mean you shouldn't prep and be aware, but to make any kind of rash decision on the statements happening out of his mouth or the media's mouth is just a great way to completely crush your business. So the good example I'd have is, I think we had a handful. So, you know, thankfully we have hundreds of clients, but we had, I think, three or four that completely shut off their marketing in March because of the tariff conversation, March and April. And it's like, well, that's not going to, you know how that's going to work out. Like, hey, let's say tariffs do come into play. You want less revenue too? Like, that's going to be a really hard business to run. So, you know, if you're having a conversation, if you're a marketer having a conversation with a CFO, it's the only way to combat tariffs is try to negotiate your costs, raise your prices, and drive more revenue so you can absorb that fixed cost. And like, yes, you should do some cost cutting, but cutting your marketing, it's this funny thing that it is. From like a tactical perspective, it's easy to cut. You just go.
It's a control. It's a controllable,
it's a control thing.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a control thing.
But and it's also non-confrontational. You fire agency, God forbid. Like, it's like, for your business, it's always a dumb, almost always a dumb move. Like, you are inherently saying we shouldn't be going after people
we're
to buy our product.
We're closed for business.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So we saw this in COVID when COVID hit too, where a handful of companies made those like emotional decisions to cut back.
Yeah,
and they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not because of the market, not because, like, these were e-commerce companies. I remember a furniture company that was performing incredibly well, turned everything off because the guy said, I've been here before. I was in 08. I know what's coming. Just shut it all down. Shut it all off. And well, guess what happened to that business? And let's talk about the furniture market in mid to late 2020. Yeah, it was insane. So it's the same thing now. It's not the same thing. Like, there's a different factor, but it's the same idea of like, you got to go to the actual facts of what's happening.
Yeah.
And what seems to be happening is most people are dealing with maybe a 10% increase in cost. So, you know, increase your price by 5%, negotiate your cost down by 5%, do work some magic there. That's what I know. The smartest people I know that are the most rational, that's what they're doing. They're talking to their manufacturers. They're making them eat some of it. They're figuring it out and they're balancing it out, and it's going to barely affect the consumer and moving on. And so that's that. And that's, again, if you're rational, it also stops all the like indigestion, sleepless nights that you're forcing on yourself, because it's really not going to be, I think, that bad. There's a whole nother, again, geopolitical conversation I'm not including in this of like, what does this America trust and blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying specifically as just a product manufacturer, I wouldn't be panicking right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we've been having questions with a lot of our clients, and the question that often comes up is, it costs so much for us to acquire new customers. It seems like it's diminishing returns. Why do I need to spend so much money on new to file? Why can't I just focus on our existing customers?
Great question. wrote a book about this. So the easiest answer is, you're always losing customers. They're changing priorities. They're getting older. They're, you know, whatever is happening, they're dying. Like, I hate to be morbid, but we all are. So like, at some point you're going to lose customers. It's the most factual certainty that like you will lose customers. So if you want to sustain or grow, you have to find new customers. That's it. And that's why it's the whole, if you're not growing, you're dying. Like, if you're not attracting new potential customers, you will die.
Right. I love that. And it's like, hey, a marketer sometimes you know, businesses, sometimes owners will go to like, well, no, we can make our existing customers more profitable. They'll just pay more. And like, that's how we'll get to growth. But that does have diminishing returns, as you said. So you talk a lot about, you know, these three pillars of marketing, the Hawk method, right? Awareness, nurturing, trust. And, you know, you've also mentioned like, a marketing can't fix a bad product. Can you talk about that? So it's pivoting gears a little bit, but just like love to unpack that. I think you had a post on it recently. What's kind of your guidance in this area?
Yeah, it's just, it's the number one driver of business still to this day. And I don't know that this will change just because of human nature is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have a good product that people want to talk about, you're going to have a really hard, if not impossible, time growing it. And I speak in hyperbole. There's exceptions to the rule. I'm sure there's someone out there that has created a horrible product and has scammed enough marketing that it works out. There's one guy I won't call out in mind that sells a lot of courses that are terrible courses and terrible product, but flashes it enough that it's worked. So once in a while, you can, you know, scam people. Literally, that would be a scam. If you're selling a terrible
does
product.
Does he sell his courses from his garage?
I'm sure he does, but I feel like that's quite a few people.
That's scary, actually.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot. It's the cliche, and this I don't mind calling out. Like, look at my Ferrari, buy my course. It's like every time I see someone flashing a car as a sign of wealth, I'm like, I don't have an employee that makes less than a Ferrari costs on a monthly basis. I don't have anyone making less money than that. So like, it is insane to me that that's what people look at as wealth, and it's a statement of priorities. Side note, but that a little tangent there. But yeah, in terms of bad product, like, yeah, it's just, again, word of mouth matters so much that if I can't rely on what's called a K factor or viral coefficient, but my customers to tell other people, then it's going to be really expensive if I have to buy every customer and convince them to buy. Plus, you're dealing with the headwinds of bad reviews and lack of, you know, third-party validation and lack of trust that starts to happen. Like, it is near impossible to build a business off that. And not vice versa. If you have a product that people love that they talk about, marketing is easy. Because then if I get one customer and they go tell a bunch of people, it, you know, unless you're really bad at managing your margins in a business, you should have an easy time doing marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's right. And one of the things you mentioned about trust, I mean, we have been preaching here on this program for the past year. One of our five forces, like, you can either trade on trust or trade on price. And generally people have to pick one, and you almost always should choose trust because that's how you're going to grow your business.
Yeah, I went that freshman year of undergraduate business school that competing on price is a race to the bottom and never do that. Like, that is not what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that's why we've never paid attention to what our competitors charge. We charge what we have to keep our business afloat, and that's what we charge. It's like when I hear, oh, we can get it cheaper. I'm like, well, we don't have absurd margins. So either they're doing less work or like spending less time on it, or they're using junior talent. So you're going to get what you pay for in that sense. Like, that's the only other variables, or they're underwater themselves. And then, they're going to be gone anyway. So I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah. How do you feel like social is evolving in 2025? You know, we talked, I think last year a lot about TikTok. We talked about all these social platforms, you know, where is Meta at? It feels like they sometimes have this identity crisis, but you have to be there. So what's your take in this era of modern marketing? Where is social media, and like, what are people doing right, and what are people really missing the boat on?
Yeah, I'd say the new hot on the scene that I'm seeing more and more compelling things coming out of is Shorts, YouTube. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It seems that Snap is struggling more than it has in the past. They just had a horrible earnings report and everything, which is a bummer. They're local here. I want to see them succeed, but they seem to be on the right track about a year ago. And then all of a sudden they laid off a bunch of the team that seemed to be on the right track. So I'm not sure, you know, I'm not in the room to make the decision. Oh, finally, you're doing the things I think you should be doing. And not that I'm the one running Snapchat, but then that went away. And then their stock went from going up to back down. So trying to figure that out. But, Facebook and Instagram's still the strongest by far from social. Facebook, from an ad performance standpoint, is good, but I don't know who's using it. Like, I'm still kind of we kind of check the box and use it, but I'm not seeing
it's a grandparent contingent.
Right. TikTok Shop's been incredible. Like, that's been a great channel for a lot of brands with the right brands. They're doing a great job there.
Unpack TikTok Shop for a second, because I think a lot of people think they could just like send a fee to TikTok Shop and then the cash is going to start rolling in. What's the approach there?
I will.
That is missing. Like this, it's almost like, what's the rest of the story?
Right, influencer partners and the right people promoting it, all that. Yeah. That's super important. But I will also make the statement: I personally am not like the in the weeds TikTok shopper.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go too far, but I'm looking at the overall numbers and going, oh wow, these brands are doing great. Our team's doing great. So, and that's what I'm seeing is the right partners, the right people presenting. And when I say influencers, they don't need to necessarily be these well-known influencers. Just it's kind of like the home shopping network sometimes where it's like just someone that really meshes with the brand and just resonates. Those things can go viral. So it's a really cool, it's again, I would say it's finally someone created the online QVC, which everybody's been trying to since.
Yes. Yeah. If everyone has really tried to break through there. And even, you know, Amazon's tried live shopping and it just like has not seemed to take off, but they have the audience.
Isn't necessarily live. That's I think the part that like Americans don't want to work on your time. Like, it's like, I don't care that you're going to go live at 6:00. I'm busy at 6:00. I'll be there at 7:00. Yeah. Like, that's the part that I haven't seen change. Mm-hmm. And we have our venture fund. We're constantly looking at new technologies. And live shopping was really compelling. I wanted to bet on it.
Yeah.
But
I
didn't see the human behavior going there. And so we held off. And I'm sure there's some that are doing decently. But I didn't believe that was going to be the next $1 billion thing right now. Maybe I'm wrong in a couple of years and I missed that boat. But that's been – but, TikTok Shop's been good. And funny enough, one of our investments that's leaned really into it, Super Affiliate, they're crushing it with sort of the influencer collaboration and all those things. So that's been fun. And then I'm trying to think, Twitter is basically be as controversial as you can and you'll get some attention. So if that works for your brand or company, that can be compelling. But it's, you know, lack of a better word, it's just a cesspool. It's like, I like, by habit, I'll go through all the social media channels because I'm consistent.
You have to. Yeah.
Exactly. And when I open Twitter, I just feel like I need to take a shower after.
I do. Same. I had to go on recently for something and I was like, oh.
By the way, on either political spectrum, anywhere
totally.
You
it's
sit.
It's everywhere.
It's like, oh, God.
It's bad in both directions.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
It's worse than every world.
Yeah, 100%. Well, from a content perspective, because you guys work with B2B, B2C, are there certain formats that you find either work better based on the business type or is it pretty consistent?
No. So that was actually going to be my main point. The main trend we're seeing right now, we actually made an acquisition for this a couple months ago because we think this is probably the most important part of marketing for the time being is becoming a media company. It's been something that companies have done for a long time. So there's nothing new. It's just more important now. And what I mean by that is like Red Bull is the best example. Right. They have their media house. Their media house, I think at this point, makes more money than the beverage, which is crazy. But like it's a big compelling part of their business. And it's in the idea of being, you know, the newsroom, the content creator, for your space. And so when you're talking about these platforms, testing what's working for you, like as simple as on LinkedIn, adding an image or not, and which performs better and when. So like we talked about this actually in a meeting this morning where some of my like I posted last night that this has gotten, I didn't think this would be so controversial. I just posted a redacted view of my calendar and it's stacked.
Yeah.
And now I've got like some people I really respect having like debates online, like Roy Rubin who founded Magento and I went back and forth about like, that's not a productive way to run your calendar. I'm like, but you don't know, like I redacted it. So you don't know that like that block right there, that was me getting sushi with my wife.
Right.
Like, right.
You know, it's so good, but it's funny, but that image was compelling. Whereas I posted sort of my history of like where I was at 21, 22, 23, et cetera, and kind of gave a little timeline. If I had put an image there, it would have been a distraction. The point was the timeline. Mm-hmm, so it's like figuring out the content. I really like LinkedIn for B2B right now from a content perspective.
Yeah.
Advertising, still not that compelling, but creating content, it really can go viral. It really gets out there. And people on there are very much focused on, you know, who should I be working with? Who should I be networking with? So I like that a lot. Instagram's kind of the same. Like, you know, I think that you can, what's funny is the sort of podcast interview being recorded video has worked really well, it seems. I think that trend will go away, but it still seems to be working, is like being interviewed and talking about stuff. And so looking at that, but you know, this is where when everyone's doing the same thing, figuring out the next thing that's different, it's super important.
Yeah.
And so for every brand, that's going to be different. You know, like my friend just launched his insole company, like running shoe inserts that you can really scan on your phone and they send you a custom insert for $200. It's really cool.
Very cool.
His video of it is him I think he was in the airport and he like takes off his shoe and scans his foot on the ground in the airport and then puts his shoe back on and walks away. And it was like, it popped up for me, and his name's Cole. I'm like, hey, it's Cole. Wait, this is an ad? This is awesome. And yeah. Their ad is crushing it. He's been telling me their numbers. Like, they are doing really well. And it's just wow. a very authentic kind of patterner up. Like, what the hell is that person doing? Oh, yeah. That's funny. And oh, that's yeah. a cool idea. Like, that yeah. stuff worked. And that's
I mean, there's so much noise. You got to be right. able to like cut through it and get something in the first. Yeah. Now people, you say, oh, the first like 5 seconds, I feel like it's like 2 to 3. It's like,
I think it's 1. Like yeah. it is. I mean, think about your habit of like watch someone on Reels. It yeah. is boop, boop.
Yeah.
Boop. You have that long. So yeah. it's yeah. like, and so I, yeah, we talk about that on our social team all the time. It's like no cover photo, no like, you know, intro, just get right to,
get
the, point,
to the point,
then yeah. go into anything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that,
so what's going on in the agency world, Eric? You guys have been, we talked a lot about, you know, you've acquired different companies and you look at like where you can bring additional expertise. You talk about also scaling, you know, effectively and how you guys can grow sustainably. Like, what is your take on where marketing agencies are going and service models are going?
Yeah, it's honestly, how do I put this? The volatility is really hard for agency founders to get their head around. Mm-hmm. So a lot are seeking stability, which is why our M&A practice has been so good. Like, thankfully, I've done well enough that I can deal with this emotionally and mm-hmm. business-wise, that we're like, okay, we can deal with a little bit of uncertainty. When I say a little, I shouldn't even say a little bit of uncertainty, but I remain optimistic that at some point things stabilize for a little bit, and that's going to be a really fun time. I do think you have a lot of people burning out, a lot of people just at the end of their rope, a lot of agencies shutting down, a lot of agencies selling, a lot of agency founders punting it to someone else and being like, I'm yeah. done. I spoke to one of the larger agencies in the digital agencies of the country founder today. He stepped down as CEO. They've got sold the company 3 times. Like, he's made his money. He's just like, and he's right. done. He's like, all right, you know. Yeah. And so, and his, what he quoted was, it, you know, now with tariffs, like, it's enough. Like, it's just another thing and another thing, another thing. And spends have not increased for a few years. It's been yeah. 3 years of not seeing really like, okay, let's get after it.
Yeah.
It was and if you were around before that, you know, we were, you know, 11 and a half years old. So the 8 years before that, I didn't realize how much fun we were having. Everybody just can grow everything. And so let's go. And it's like, so I remain optimistic that that time will come again. And in the meantime, we're stable, we're good, but we're having to really work really hard to build this versus like, you're fighting through, I'd say, light headwinds versus insane tailwinds. Because I wouldn't call these heavy headwinds. These aren't like, we're a disaster. We're growing, we're building, but it does feel like it's a push versus keeping up. Because I remember like the stress of the business the first 6 years was, how do we keep up with all this?
Yeah.
How do we hire enough people? Like,
yeah.
And I will tell you, that's a lot more fun to run than we get enough business to keep our people.
Correct.
Right. Right. Remember that, Andy, if you watch The Office, and Andy Bernard, and he was like, I wish you knew you were in the good old days when you were in the good old days.
Yeah, exactly.
You start to feel like that a little
bit.
No
truer words. But again, it's a cycle. And I think that in a lot of ways, you know, the stock market hasn't spoken to it other than, and 2022 is pretty bad, but the site, we're in a down cycle. We're in, you know, consumer spending is fine, but you know, business spending is not like, there's been no liquidity, no investment, investment 22, 23, 24, 25 have been
right up.
And those, it usually doesn't last that long. Like, this has been an extended time of people holding off on alternative investments, venture investing, all these things. And the problem is it's self-fulfilling because all the people that made a lot of investments in 2020 and 2021 and before are sitting here going, where's my liquidity? Like,
right. They want their cash.
Something. It's like, we'd love to sell something, but nobody wants to buy anything. So we're even in that position. Our venture funds are in the top 10% of venture funds in the country in terms of on paper performance, but actually getting liquidity to give the cash back to our founders or our investors.
Yeah. It's a challenge.
We'd have to take a huge discount. We don't need to want to do that. So
who wants to do that? Yeah, you just keep writing it out, right?
Exactly.
I wanted to go further and frame your comments about the agency founders and how they're feeling, framed against some of the recent comments by Mark Zuckerberg about the future of the advertising industry. I'm sure you've seen some of those things where it's like, generative AI is going to obviously, look, we've seen it in the past 3 years with the rise of PMax and Advantage and these things where it's like the agency has less to do. Like, you're not, you don't need a media buyer per se anymore because you're not going to be better than the algorithm. In the future, it's like, if that happens for creative, where does the agency move?
Yeah, good question. Well, there's a few things. One, I will outperform the just direct algorithm in those media buys every day. Like, and this is the part that I think people really miss. They look at the cost of their agency, not the outcome they're driving. And that is a huge problem with, like, you know, and it's usually more amateur founders, but it's a problem because the example I'll give is, let's say just hypothetically, we charge 10% on ad spend. And we're going to spend $100,000 a month for you, which means we're going to cost $10,000. I will have conversations with people like, well, I found a guy that'll do it for $8,000. So like, and I'm like,
cool.
You're going to save $2,000. Yeah. Okay. Well, that $100,000 for you to even be viable needs to turn into about $400,000 or more. But let's just say we hit baseline and we hit $400,000. You're going to risk $400,000 a month in returns to save $2,000. Like, that's the decision you're making. Like, I promise we pay for our
right.
That's not an
I issue. Personally guarantee I'm going to give you that $8,000 back.
And that is at the actual conversation, because we charge between 8 and 20% depending on
the scale. You're so totally correct.
Yeah.
But this goes to the same question, which is the AI piece. Like, you're going to hit a point where, like, the AI, like, I mean, creative is going to take a while. Like, I just saw a great video where it's like, all they did was say duplicate this picture 75 times from a photo. And each time they just said, okay, now duplicate it, now duplicate it, now duplicate it. And what it went from first to last is ridiculous. It was like a Jewish white woman sitting like this to a black woman. And the Jewish white woman was really skinny to like an overweight black woman sitting like this. And it's like, how did this happen? And it just shows like, and that's more of like it replicating, but also like the designs look like these like word art rendered crap. And we all know it's AI. And so I just saw another agency founder, I won't call him out, but if he hears this, he'll know who he is. And I respect him, but he was talking about like, oh, that's it. We're using this. Like, he's showing a bunch of AI. It's like, yeah, I'd use that in an ad. I'm like, you would? That's
yikes.
Exactly. Like, okay, well, back to me paying for myself, my two extra $1,000 are going to be covered because I'm going to have a much better ad than you.
Yeah.
And so as that progresses, it's kind of like, so when Photoshop came out, they said there was a death of art directors. That's it. We don't need art directors.
Yeah.
We have Photoshop. And then you go, oh yeah, who's managing Photoshop? And so same thing. It's like, yeah, sure. Like, the job of a media buyer and the job of a designer is going to change. I think it's going to be much more volume, much more iterative, you know, and quicker to market. Like, a lot of things are going to happen there, but you're going to need someone to do that. And it's not going to be the founder.
Yeah. That person needs taste. That person needs.
When they need the AI direction. And at some point, listen, there's a cool kind of utopian future where AI just knows the ads to create and just goes and does it. And it thinks uniquely enough about your brand and your audience that it can compete. But at that point, it's like, okay, so then everyone's doing the exact same thing because it's the same AI running that for everyone. So then you're like, okay, then how do you stand out?
Where's the differentiation?
Exactly.
And that might just go back to in-person. Like, we're all getting hit with all these emails and ads and everything. And everyone goes, I don't know what's going on anymore. And so that is going to be the new jobs, whatever that is. And I've heard this, which kind of resonates, like, in-person sales is going to maybe go through a huge renaissance. Not that it ever went away, but like, people are going to just won't crave human connection.
Just get back in just get back in front of someone. Well, and I was like curious, you know, connected TV, everyone's like talking about connected TV a lot. And, you know, is that like anything you're seeing?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it still just kind of like on the precipice of...
No, I think it's a great channel. If you're at the scale where you've built a good funnel and you can go a little wider on your reach, and because it's a little less targeted, it's good targeting, but it's not like the social channels. Yeah. We see it perform great. We're actually really doubling down on connected TV. So these are all things that are working. And that's the part to remember the most is like, it sounds scary. It's kind of just like the economy. The media is making AI sound super scary. And at the end of the day, ChatGPT came out, it's been 3 years, like ChatGPT 3, like, it hasn't gone that fast. Like, some cool stuff has happened, but it's not, you just kind of have to stay aware and you keep up. It's not going to be like overnight, like, oh God, everything's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to wrap on a question that kind of goes back to one of the comments you made earlier, which is brands should become media companies. And I think we hear a lot of people say this, but if you believe that it's true, which I think some people do, but then what to do about it is the question.
Great question. So I always say your content should be solving the same problem your product and brand are. So it depends on what is your value proposition. For us, you know, we're helping companies grow. We're helping, you know, we always say we're hired for people that need bandwidth or expertise. They need to know how to do marketing or they need someone to do it. And so for us, we're speaking to business owners and heads of marketing. So our content is informing them on all the things about here's what's going on in the market. But we actually talk a little wider than just marketing. We talk about entrepreneurship. We talk about my calendar and all these things to actually share, like, here's operating a business, because that's what they're looking for, is someone that can really help them grow their business. So that's our content strategy and what we go to. So if you're back to the running inserts company, people are buying that because they want to, they're going for performance. We talked about it. So they're going to be a performance company. And so they're talking about running performance. What are the best stretches to do? What are the, you know, what are training tips? Like, things that also solve the same problem your product does, so that as I'm thinking about my running performance and I'm coming back over and over again, engaging, I'm like, oh, I need to buy one of these.
Right.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That's awesome. Go ahead. Eric, it's been, so amazing to have you here, especially in the time we're in where there's people trying to figure out what they can trust. Our North Star here is trust. And so we want our viewers to understand, like, if you come here, we're not going to hype you. We're not going to try to tell you it's doom and gloom. But if it is doom and gloom, we're going to tell you. But if not, you know, here we're trying to actually shoot kind of straight down the middle right now, which is like, prepare, like, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And we haven't seen anything near the worst.
Keyword
right now.
Prepared, not act.
100%. Yeah. So having a forecast is differently than acting as if that forecast has
reality.
A high degree of certainty, which it doesn't. It has actually quite low certainty.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I would say the last thing on that is I betting on Trump being self-serving and wanting the economy to rip is a pretty good bet. So,
Yeah, exactly. Well, we appreciate you as always. You're welcome to stay for our dance party. I want to see if you picked up some new moves since we last saw you.
I have not, but I'm going to use it.
All right. Well, all good. And people can find, you just launched Hawkeye View, right? Yeah. A newsletter. So folks should sign up for that and check that out. And we'll bring you back towards the end of the show.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Awesome.
All right. We're going to bring on our friend Nick Kaplan. He has been held hostage way too long. So let's hit it real quick. Oh, we got that mute button.
Yeah, our producer was producing me, get me ready. There was so much great stuff in the conversation with Eric today. He's such a smart guy.
He is.
I was sitting here watching, and I'm like, I want to talk about that. But he, you know, earlier on in the headline hangover, I mean, of course, with Matt Shea, you guys didn't hear, but the headline from NRF is that holiday is going to be up 3.8%. So
hey, I hope it is. That'd be good for everybody.
Always what they say. And that Scott Bessent yesterday was like, oh, the shelves are not going to be bare. Retailers were preparing for this. So we're in great hands. But I think
last few minutes.
I mean, I'm back 3 weeks in a row. It's Kaplan held hostage week three. You can't live with them. You can't live without them. So what do you do with them? This week, we're talking about people. So they are a most valuable and volatile part of the business. And yesterday night and this morning, as I do, flipping through both my Google and Apple News, got to keep it real, I love the picture of Zook and Satya talking about AI, Zook with his super cool AI glasses. He's evolving his look all the time with his chain. And but I thought it was super interesting that Microsoft is saying that now 20 to 30% of its code and its dev work is being done with AI. And while non-committal, which is a Zook trademark move, he did say that they think that maybe 50% within the next year of their dev work could be done. Then I also got hit with de minimis quietly ended at 12:01 a.m. this morning and how that's going to impact the workforce and consumers. I read an article about the jobs report, which we've spoken about, it stayed flat. But what I then read was an article from The Atlantic that there's a quiet trend happening inside the world, and grads are unemployed at a rate of an astonishing 5.8%. And I don't know if you guys know this. I'll ask for a guess, as I'd love it to keep it interactive. Law school applications are up. Any guess as to what percentage they're up year over year, guys?
Ooh. I don't know. 10, 20?
That's a very big guess, Jess. What about you, Rick? Anything?
12.
20.5%, 39,600 people applied in 24, which is up 4% from LY. This is a sign maybe of not such great things to come, as people can't, unless the hospitality world and some of the things you spoke about, Jess, but more challenges finding jobs. And so, you know, we are in this moment, right? We are being held hostage. It is not our choice. And, you know, I think to what Eric said earlier, and now I'd love to spend 6 years on the show in this capacity, we cannot hunker and wait this out for 6 years. And so in the spirit of like things we've spoken about, you know, evolve or die, a few strategies to consider as it relates to people, because when dealing with people, it's really not so black and white often. And so number one, evaluate, like, and then reevaluate, like sit down and really force rank your people, think about the value they're adding, because you got to make tough decisions. I love the book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. It is a great read, because it is not easy when you're alone or when you're in a tough spot to make these types of decisions. And so start to eliminate people, because creep is real and people are not incentivized to be like, hey, I actually don't think you need me. And I think that, you know, while I wouldn't just arbitrarily remove someone, I would say it's a moment to sort of like really make those decisions and evaluate. I would sort of mention too, and I don't want to be remiss to keep consistent, the C-suite. Like, if you don't have C-suite players that are playing high and low, that are rolling up their shirt sleeves, they're adding value, you know, I'm really more about, as I said last week, directors and managers helping you lead your business. And that includes all businesses of all shapes and sizes. Think outside the box, like literally. And I think that it's really great having Eric on today, because I'm a huge believer in the agency. And I think he said it oh so very well, that, you know, $10,000 of $100,000, people are like, oh my God, I'm spending $10,000. But Eric's point's right. You are getting subject matter expertise. You're getting 24/7 support, and you're getting a subject matter expert that can be there for you, help you, and drive the results that maybe you don't often see far through the trees, but we know they're there. And so don't be penny wise and pound foolish. But then when thinking about being a little bit more penny wise, you need to be, as we've talked about before, thinking about a BPO strategy. Like, it is not about cost. There are subject matter experts, wonderful data people in Brazil I've worked with, devs in South Africa, Ukraine, India, graphic design India. So think about that. Find outside talent. It is so available to you now through the World Wide Web. And so what I would say is, like, people, as we mentioned, it's a strategy, right? It's part of your business strategy. Performance, not presence. Like, don't say, oh, I need a person to do this. I need the right person to do this. And don't be afraid to make a difficult decision if they're not the right person. AI plus humans could be a force multiplier. Start looking into AI. Start thinking about how that can benefit your staff, and then partner that back into like a BPO or an agency strategy. Be leaner, more nimble. Don't worry about maybe benefits and other things that you don't have to burden with these ancillary things, where you can find someone that may be a little bit more expensive but will deliver you what you might need. I agree with Eric, right? You know, commerce and content, like, you got to think about that. And last thing is, when you have those really great people and they are so, so, so very valuable, retention isn't a customer strategy. Retention also needs to be an employee strategy. And think about that. Think about cutting the ones that can't make it, but investing in the ones that can. And that, my friends, will really help you get through the new normal. Because while de minimis is never going away and the world has changed forever, it is a new normal, and we need to evolve with it, because we got to survive, because if we don't, we die. And that, my friends, today is Kaplan's Corner, Held Hostage, week 3.
All right. We're going to get you out, my friend. I promise. And Great. Nothing can get you out like a little bit of a dance party. So yeah.
We're bringing Eric back.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Eric, for being here. Amazing as always. Thanks for watching. See you next week, and let's do this. Come on, Nick. Come on.
Roll up.
You